You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, all the issues covering down on them. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to Tuesday. Tuesday all day long, and Boomer's on the board. Hey, buddy.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm making it.
just making it?
Yeah, making it. It's a good day.
Okay, making it. As long as you're making it, we're working. Hey, we got a great show laid on for you, too. So at 3 o'clock today, Jeff Poor, who comes on the show pretty regularly, does the Grand Council with us on Wednesdays, that kind of thing. I was on his show this morning, and I said, dude, you got to come on mine today, too. So he's coming on at 3 o'clock today. We're going to talk about some things that are happening down yonder in Montgomery on Goat Hill, the State House. And we'll cover all those kind of details with Jeff Poor at 3 o'clock. It falls right in line, though, with the Triple Dipper, so hit it.
The Triple Dipper, three stories you've got to know.
That's right, the Triple Dipper, three stories, three themes, if you will, that we're going to go with as we run today's show. Number one, it's time. We got to do it. We got to cook up a little home fries. We got a whole slew of stuff laid on. Boomer, do you even have a sound effect for it this time? Are we gonna be like sound effect friendly on home fries?
Maybe.
All right, we'll get the sizzle going. Home fries, all the news around here. What's happening around your home, your communities, right here in the state of Alabama. So number one, Triple Dipper, home fries. Number two, probably one of the most amazing developing stories is the ongoing saga of China. All right, China Rising is number two on the Triple Dipper. China Rising is, this is our, and they often call it a near peer adversary. Conflict in this case would be what they called Great War Conflict. We don't want that. It's bad, obviously. But we're going to talk about the things that are developing right now with major emphasis being put on, you know, public relations and domestic relations and international relations and military relations with China. So, yeah, China Rising, number two on the Triple Dipper. Stay tuned for that one. And then number three, man, I know we got a sound effect for this one, Kakistocracy. Kakistocracy, a word that was given to me by a friend not long ago. It's a real word, Kakistocracy. It actually means a government run by the least competent of its members. Wow. You know, I got stories that'll just boggle your mind, like, what's going on with Pete Buttigieg and why are they talking about racist roads again? All that kind of stuff. Kakistocracy. You guys stay tuned for that one. It'll be good. Well, all right. Well, let me jump over to my monologue, my opening comments for the day. And I'll start by telling you, I used to do a lot of backpacking back in the day. I love the outdoors, still do. And to me, one of the richest times in life is sitting with friends around a campfire after a solid day's hike. My favorite is actually winter backpacking. I love being out in the cold. There's no mosquitoes then. But I've been out in some ice storms that rocked our world. I've been above the tree line in the Rockies, spent time in the Smokies and along the lower Appalachian Trail. With winter backpacking, it's a bit different. The temperatures, the threats of inclement weather means you have to carry more, right? You get into that first fine line of how much to carry, knowing you don't want to freeze to death, but then again, you don't want to carry so much, you create a different kind of misery. But I usually erred on the side, me personally, of carrying just one more thing. And yes, sometimes it was hard. But having had frostbite in my military past, I was determined not to be in that position. So my rule, and yes, it was a rule, was this. Quote, you can always take off what you don't need, but you can't put on what you don't have. It's a good rule. Dry socks, an extra shirt, my favorite fleece. It may take more to get those things to the campsite, but once you're there, they make it all the better. But also know, though, what it means to go without. And know what it means to be in a hard place doing hard things without the right gear, and it ain't good. In 2004, I was in Baghdad during the era of soft-sided Humvees. There is zero protection from a canvas door, I assure you. All the canvas door did was make some of the dust and direct sun kind of stay off of us, nothing more. My team was initially task-organized under an infantry battalion of the 1st Armored Division. And all they drove was soft-sided vehicles. And then we began to branch out, and we hired local Iraqi labor to cut steel and hang them on the hinges. Except they were too heavy for the hinges, had a tendency to break off, so we had to put reinforced hinges on as well. But they had no glass. They were just steel doors, but at least it felt better. Just like half steel doors. And then we contracted with local labor again to build steel shells for the truck beds of some of our Humvees, which was cool, but it overwhelmed the suspension. And the Humvees would literally drive with their noses in the air because of all the rear weight. So then we had to beef up the suspensions. By the time we got these things all steeled up, it was like a bunch of vehicles from a Mad Max movie. But we just took to calling them Jed Clampets. Jed Clampets, after the junky old truck they drove on the Beverly Hillbillies sitcom. That old rule about you can take off what you don't need, but you can't put on what you don't have, well, it was getting some serious use. That rule is true. And we couldn't put on anymore. We just didn't have what we needed. But then came the changeover, and the 1st Armored Division transitioned out of the battle space, and my team was assigned to an infantry battalion under the 1st Cavalry Division. And every one of those Muldoons came to town in brand-new, up-armored Humvees complete with ballistic glass, hardened body shells, and reinforced suspensions, and of all things, air conditioning. Our Jed Clampets looked pretty sad sitting next to those armored Cadillacs. But back at home, my sweet wife was praying. Literally, I'm not kidding. My sweet wife was praying. She was literally praying that God would put me in an armored vehicle. Somehow she knew the deal, and she also knew what was available, and she was praying like only a military spouse knows how to pray. Lord, bless Phil with an armored vehicle. So one day on the FOB, maybe a month after the new battalion had taken over, I was in the battalion talk, and the XO, the executive officer, he hollered at me to come by his office. His name was Major Ed Tangy, a really good guy from Oregon. So I headed down the hall, came in to see him. He asked a few questions about my team's operations, the level of effort we were applying to do things for the battalion to shape the battle space in and among the civilian population. He asked where we'd been most recently, and then he sort of seemed surprised to hear how often we were outside the wire. Little did I know that within the battalion, the line companies, they rotated their time off the FOB, but the XO looked at me and said, "But you guys roll out the gate pretty much every single day." "Roger that," I said. "And then you could have knocked me down with a feather," he said. "Well, then I'm giving you my up-armored Humvee." I kid you not. We couldn't put any more rigged-up, homespun fake armor on our old Jet Clampets. But now we didn't have to. The XO treated us like one of his own, gave us his personal armored vehicle, with air conditioning, no less. And soon thereafter, I sent Charlene a picture of me standing in front of my new fancy up-armored Humvee holding a sign that read, "Happy Mother's Day." It was the best Mother's Day gift I could have sent her. And later on, when that car bomb went off that VBIED next to my convoy, I was doubly glad we had it. But that experience reinforced for me the idea that our troops should never have to be without. They should not be faced with the decision of whether or not to have to over-modify their gear. It's one thing to go buy your own holster or special thermal insulated long johns, right? But no soldier should have to bet their life on subpar or, for that matter, obsolete gear. The United States has the greatest military on the face of the earth, and as a result, we have the largest military budgets in the history of forever. But our men and women deserve it. Is there waste, fraud, and abuse in the efforts made by the military-industrial complex? Yeah, absolutely there is. And that's why conservatives have got to step in and provide the kind of accountability that's needed. But we also need to stop wasting time and spending precious defense dollars on woke ideologies and feel-good, green energy-compliant facilities, pushing to make our military vehicles compatible with the latest net-zero emissions ideologies. I fully expect that gas stoves are not going to be allowed in future mess halls the way we're going, that the military is going to have first sergeants conducting inspections on a Friday night to make sure that only LED bulbs are being used. And somewhere every day of the year, there's going to be some young trooper who gets less time on a firing range or less time in his combat vehicle or less time servicing a helicopter because it's imperative that they spend precious training time attending seminar-style briefings on the dangers of not being gender-friendly, or why co-ed showers in the barracks are really not a big deal. We need to give the men and women who serve in this greatest of militaries the gear and the training that they need to fight and win. We need to increase both lethality and survivability. Stop fluffing up the budgets with unnecessary social experimentation and get back to training and equipping warriors. Because the bottom line is, they can always take off what they don't need. But our soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines, they cannot put on what they don't have. Let's give them what they need. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way. Well, there you have it. I'm telling you, it was an incredible experience. It also solidified for me going to war when you're not equipped for it is never a good thing. But I will say this. We caught up. We caught up, and we got things in place, and we got to do a better job of making sure the next go-round that things are already in place before we start. All right, folks, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, saving the world one soundbite at a time. So, man, we got some stuff laid on for today. I'm kind of excited about these topics. I don't say excited like, oh, I love talking about China rising up, but I'm just saying I'm excited about the level of content we have here. But
I am too.
Well, thank you.
I am. After doing the resources and stuff, I'm like, oh man, it's going to be a good informational day.
Yeah, it's got depth.
Yes, lots of depth.
Unfortunately, there has to be depth in some of the bad news stories too. But there's just that. But I tell you what else I'm excited about. Your little man's got a baseball game tonight.
Ooh, baseball game tonight.
Who are the Tigers playing tonight?
I don't know. Maybe the Bananas. I don't know who they're
playing. The Bananas.
Who knows?
There better not be a team called the Bananas.
Well, you know, there's Savannah Bananas.
That's right. What am I saying?
Yeah, and they're awesome.
They're Savannah Bananas. Well, hilarious. You know what? That's true. The minor league teams have got some weird names.
They got some fun
names.
We
got our Huntsville Trash Pandas.
Yes.
We got the Montgomery Biscuits.
Awesome. Two great names in Alabama. Yeah.
And then Savannah Bananas.
And you got the Barons.
Yeah, the Barons. Mm-hmm. What's down in Mobile? The Bay Bears?
Bay Bears?
I think it's the Bay Bears.
It's fun. That's just awesome.
That's good.
Good names.
Text lines are open, by the way, 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT, which, by the way, some of y'all are already hitting that text line. JT from Lacey Springs says, talking about my monologue, he says, I know the Clampett truck. It was a 1921 Oldsmobile based on the Model 43A. Yes, and it was probably more bulletproof than the original Jed Clampett that I had in Baghdad. So there's that. Tony from Piedmont says, my goodness, Hillbilly Armor got me in trouble for taking outside the wire to deliver an incoming SEAL team there back at base camp in 05. And that's Hillbilly Armor, though, man. You got to do what you got to do, right? So, yeah, that Hillbilly Armor was something else. Jed Clampett's, we called him. Dave from Huntsville says, bravo to Phil and Charlene. Praise God for providing his protection. So many things would have been different over the years and today if he had not protected you. Thank God for praying parents, wives, and husbands. David, I totally agree, man. Thank you for that. Brian from Huntsville. He's telling me something about a beach. Hang on, what do we got here? Brian from Huntsville. I don't know what he's telling me. but I will go back to yours and try to figure it out there and decipher it. Brian, I apologize. John from Huntsville. Oh, well, thank you, John. John says that was one of the best monologues ever. He says, by the way, I love watching the Beverly Hillbillies. Especially Ellie Mae, played by the beautiful Donna Douglas. Yep. I think they're all gone now. I think all of the members of the cast are now gone. Or maybe the last one was Max Baer, was the guy who played Jethro. He was actually the son of the boxer, Max Baer, I believe. Chuck from Oneida, Tennessee. I've always said and believe that no matter how you feel about the situation our military's in, you give them everything, all caps, they need to complete their mission and return home safely. Yes, sir. Roger that. Raven from Russell says, think about it, Colonel. All our high-speed gear was made by the lowest bidder. we found ourselves saying that several times. And I'm going to tell you, too, man, I'll never forget when we first got our jacked-up Jed Clampett's which we had to add more onto, by the way. When we first got them, we did a battle handoff from the outgoing unit, and then for some reason, some bookkeeper decided, no, you had to switch, so we had to bring them back in 2 days later and swap them with another unit. Like, why that made a difference, I never could understand it. I actually had somebody tell me we had to return our ammo by lot number, and I said, yeah, that's not going to happen. Well, why not? Because we burned some of it, and this is not going to happen. How many rounds do you want? I'll give you what I got. I don't want any of them. And the guy was like, well, we have to have back my lot number. Well, good luck. Send them to the war zone and then tell them you got to return your bullets back in by lot number. That's the stupidest thing I ever heard.
Wow.
But, yeah, so we're getting these vehicles, those Jed Clampets from the other unit. And then we had to swap. And so I sort of, you know, sometimes you can sort of smell something happening.
Yes.
So you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So we had to park our vehicles, go inside, start doing some paperwork. And something told me I need to go back outside. And by golly, I found Joe out there with a wrench trying to take the good seats out of my Humvee. And I said, I put him at parade rest. What are you doing? Sir, this was my Humvee, and I stole those seats fair and square out of another vehicle. I want them back. And I said, well, by God, two wrongs don't make you right, so you better leave my equipment alone. It's crazy, things that happen. But that was the thing that really got me, was just how much stuff we had to replace once we got there.
Hmm.
And, you know, soft-sided Humvees, they were good for nothing except driving somebody across the fob to, you know, bring chow back to the unit or something. Who knows? But anyway, all that to say, Charlene prayed. Next thing I know, I had a fully up-armored Humvee. Proud of it. Moon Pie from Madison just texted in. He said it was the Bay Bears are the ones who moved up here and became the Trash Pandas. I had forgotten that. That's right. I think he's right. Yeah, because we used to have the Huntsville Stars back in the day. Played at Stars Stadium right there on the parkway. Saw some good games there. Now they got the new field, and they brought them in and renamed them, and that was the big thing, was how do you name them? And I remember thinking, Trash Pandas? Come on! That's what we got, is the Trash Pandas?
I love it.
We couldn't come up with, like, the Rockets or, you know, or something. It's the Rocket City. But then I got, like, you know what? That's kind of growing on me, the Trash Pandas.
I like it.
And if you get down to it, the character from Guardians of the Galaxy is a trash panda named Rocket. And he carries a gun.
Is he a trash panda?
Isn't he? Yeah.
Or is he a raccoon?
Well, that's what a trash panda is.
Well, I mean, yeah, but I guess he is. So you're right. So, but man, I just love that name.
Yeah. So
all their merchandise and stuff. I'm a fan.
I'm a fan
of the trash pandas.
I got a shirt and a hat to prove it.
This is gun.
All right. Listen, we got, yeah, exactly right. That's what they need to do. They need to have the Trash Panda character toting around a space weapon.
Ooh, yes.
Come on. Guardians of the Galaxy. Wesley from Rockford, Alabama just texted in and says, I served in Iraq in 2004. We didn't have time to put the steel boxes on our gun trucks. We got lumber and built double-sided wood boxes with pockets and put sandbags in the pockets. Man, I believe it, brother. You know what? And by the way, thank you for your service, but I'll tell you right now, we found out the hard way, too, that if something blasts through that, it brings sand, like, and sand turns into shrapnel. Kind of crazy. Anyway, all right, you guys. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back with number one on the Triple Dipper, Home Fries. All you Right Side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. That would be Alabama. I'm talking about we go way on down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back over to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, Mississippi, thrown in just for good measure. Boomer, I've got a red alert for you.
Okay, red alert.
Red alert.
I wish I need a red alert button, too.
We do. Didn't we used to have sirens or something?
I took the sirens out because we didn't like them.
Oh, Lord. Well, this would be, if we still had it, this would be a siren issue right here. There's an article that just came out on Fox. I saw it during the break. I mean, literally just came out in the last 30 minutes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ooh, what is it?
Apparently, they're talking about making a sequel to Gladiator. A sequel.
Really?
To the greatest, one of the greatest man movies of all time.
I don't know. I don't know what to think about this.
Of course, Russell Crowe won't be in it. And what the article's about is the fact that, you know, his character died at the end of the first movie.
And
spoiler alert, 20 years ago.
Yeah. He made that. That character.
I mean, yeah. So it's going to be apparently what happens after, you know, like the follow-up to all of that when, you know, when they restore Rome.
Right.
And, you know, and it, I just don't know about this.
I'm not sure.
I may have to just kind of do some ruminating on it a little bit here. I'm not sure about it.
Yeah, I may have to let it just simmer.
I mean, it's like saying
figure this out.
It's like saying making a sequel to Tombstone. You can't do that. How do you do that?
Exactly.
Although I will say, The Magnificent Seven, the original, well, the new one they did with Chris Pratt and Denzel Washington.
That was pretty
good.
Pretty good.
I'm saying. Of course, that was a complete redo. That was like a reboot altogether, but that was different. That was better.
Yeah.
It was better.
I'm going to have to think about this one. Gladiator is like
I've already thought. There's no way it could beat it. No way.
Oh, there's no way it could beat it.
No way.
But don't even like, if you're going to do it, don't even mesh it together. Don't like say it's like another Gladiator.
Do you have a sound effect for home fries?
You mean that?
Yes. All right, so number one, the triple dipper, home fries. So thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Let's throw them on there and sizzle some up, man. Just going to do a little home fries. Hit it one more time while we're at it. Home fries. Thank you. Thank you very much. You did good on that.
All right, so
home fries is a segment we do periodically where I'm just going to collect up stories about where we live right here in the most beautiful state in the nation, Alabama. So, Sweet Home Alabama's got news. It's got things going on, some good, some difficult. And I will tell you this, right out the gate, Boomer and I need to go eat pizza. So, story on yellowhammer.com. Did you know, and I don't know if you saw this when you were preparing the resources or not, Boomer. I know sometimes you have to fly through what I send you. But nonetheless, did you know that more than 90 competitors that a guy named Joe Carlucci from Original Valentina's Pizzeria and Wine Bar in on Huntsville Browns Ferry Road in Madison, has just been named the best pizza maker in the world.
In the world?
The world. Like, from where pizza comes from? No. It doesn't matter where. It's Madison, right here in the state of Alabama, in our listening area, the greatest pizza in the world.
We're going to have to go.
Just, like, soon. So, yeah. So, Bronx-born Carlucci is the owner and founder of the Original Valentina's Pizzeria and Wine Bar on Huntsville Browns Ferry Road in Madison. His titles as Best Pizza Maker and Best Non-Traditional Pizza came at the recent International Pizza Expo in Las Vegas. He's been making pizza since he was 15, it says. He was mentored by his 14-time world pizza champion, a guy named Tony Gimignani. And he says that he won the Best Traditional Style Pizza in the World. He's a 5-time world pizza champion. He's a 2-time Guinness World Record holder. He's a 3-time world champion pizza acrobat, whatever that is. What? And he's won awards and competitions worldwide. And he's right here in our listening area, dude. How did we not know this?
I don't know.
I don't know either, but I do know this. I'm eating pizza like sometime real soon.
We may have to do a remote there.
The guy, do they serve maple bacon donuts?
They may. Maybe it'll be maple bacon pizza.
He's appeared on national TV shows like Today, Martha and Snoop, MasterChef Kids, Best in Dough. So here's what he used to win. You ready? I'll be honest. This is a bit highbrow. This is not the usual roll on the red sauce and slap it on the pan kind of stuff for me. He used mystery ingredients for a white pie topped with a mozzarella cheese blend, a sweet sausage, and a soppressata mixture with a honey peppadew-infused ricotta and topped with a chiffon spinach. Dang. I don't know that I can afford this pizza.
Yeah.
But I love this. He says he was asked about his success. He says, when you let God drive your bus, anything is possible.
Ooh, I like him.
All right, so we got to go. Congratulations, then, to right here in our listening area to where's it? Joe Carlucci from Original Valentina's Pizzeria and Wine Bar up there in Madison. Love it. Oh, Joe from, oh, you know what? Joe from Athens just texted in and says, go early or wait. So I guess that means more people know about it than me. All right. In other news around the state of Alabama, I don't know if y'all heard this or not, but there was another train derailment, and it was just, what, 2 days ago or yesterday? No, Saturday. It was Saturday, I'm sorry, in Jasper. Yeah, story on Yellowhammer again. Yellowhammer, the Norfolk Southern derailment Saturday night in Jasper, was the latest in a string of train derailments across the country, but it was the first one to have caused injuries to its crew members. So the crash happened near, right here in our listening area again, 1350 Old Russellville Road in Jasper. Two of the crew were injured, but they were treated at a hospital and released. The lead locomotive and 11 cars derailed. There were no toxic chemicals or anything like that, no spills. But the two crew members were initially trapped inside the engine room. It's not the first one, too. By the way, it also points out that just last month in Calhoun County, a 37-car train went off the rails, and it did have a mixed materials, hazardous materials cargo, but it was they were actually empty at the time. So yay. Anyway, that's two in a month, and I'll be honest, I don't know if Boomer, I don't recall ever seeing so many train derailments. Like growing up, you used to play by the tracks and wave to the conductors as they went by and all that. I do not remember hearing about derailments. Do you?
No, are they more common than we thought?
Well, you know, Pete Buttigieg says that it's far more common than we had thought, but I took that with a grain of salt. But now they're like showing up left and right. So, are the tracks worn out? Is maintenance bad? Are people doing things to the tracks? I don't know. All I know is I'd never heard of train derailments until here lately. Hmm. I could be wrong. We got more text coming in. Boomer, I love your home fries sound effect, but now I really want some home fries, says John from Huntsville. David from Huntsville again says, I was going to say, let me know we're going to Madison or Joe's Number One World Pizza. And then Tony from Piedmont says he also likes Terry's in Huntsville. Terry's is good. All right, next story, 1819 News. So I'll tell you what, one of the things that I cannot help but take note of is the fact that our state attorney general, Steve Marshall, is constantly pushing back on wokeness. I don't think it gets near the coverage that it should. He is constantly fighting the battle against woke. He's constantly fighting liberals. He's going to war with the Biden administration on a regular basis. And so, yeah, 1819 News reports Alabama AG Steve Marshall backs the Florida ban on Medicaid funding for gender transitions. Can you imagine this? The idea that some states are going to use Medicaid dollars. That's for indigent patients. It's not supposed to be for electives, and this is a purely elective. Although they'll tell you, no, it's gender affirming. We have to mutilate these children as quickly as possible. They need it. No, they don't. You bunch of vipers, bunch of vampires. Alabama Attorney General Steve Marshall filed an amicus brief with 16 other states supporting Florida's healthcare regulation that denies Medicaid coverage. So what happens with an amicus brief or amicus, depending upon, you know, potato, potato. Anyway, what happens is there's a lawsuit going on. Other people chime in because they believe they have an interest in the case. And so you're not necessarily getting into the lawsuit. You're just providing your input to the court. An amicus brief is what that translates to is friend of the court brief. In other words, I have Your Honor, I have something that I want to make sure that you're aware of and how this would impact us. And so you write this brief and you submit. Well, they submitted it on the side of, you know, banning Medicaid funding for gender transitions. Steve Marshall, it points out in the article, he says, protecting our children from these life-altering and damaging treatments continues to be our priority. And for many of the same reasons why kids should not be subjected to these treatments, the use of taxpayer dollars on these experimental medical interventions is unacceptable. So he steadfastly supports Florida. And you know, they point out, too, that sometimes you get, like, He'll tell you, I guarantee you, if you asked him why he filed the brief, he would say because he supports not only the safety of Alabama citizens, but the rule of law. But then the opposing briefs were filed by, like, the American Academy of Pediatrics and the World Professional Association for Transgender Health. And he points out they had a pretty self-serving need to file those briefs. I got a story here. I think I'll wait till after the break. Been a lot of nanny state stuff going on down yonder in Montgomery. Just, like, how far into our business can the government go? And do they think about the second and third order effects? I'm going to talk about it, too, also at the top of the hour with Jeff Poor. But, yeah, this – all right, so we've got bills right now that are designed to pretty much micromanage your life in some ways and also make you be held accountable for other things. Take us to a break, Boomer. We'll do that when we get back. They're all Alabama-centric. Why? Because we're doing some home fries. Home fries right now. News here around the house. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. Yeah, making it cool to be a conservative. Hey, listen, we're still in number one, home fries. Hit that sound effect, Boomer. That was as good. Oh, home fries. I like it. Okay, so home fries is a segment we do once in a while just to go ahead and cover down on news around right here around the home, right here on the home front in the realm of Alabama. Here your communities are making news, and we got to make sure we talk about that too. It's not always about what happens in D.C. But that being said, I got to tell you, there's been some filing of the nanny bills, nanny state bills down in Montgomery. And it's always intriguing when you watch legislators forget that the second and third order effects of what they think is a great idea may just be government getting way too deep in our business. It may just be that they're going a step too far. Like, I'll never forget. So State Senator Vivian Figures, she's a senator from down in Mobile area, Democrat. She and I never saw eye to eye on policy for the most part, but we got along well outside of policy. But she always brought a bill, and she had a passion for it. She had a passion for bills that were anti-smoking. I mean, she's like an anti-smoking crusader. I get it. But then she brought a bill one day again for the 19th time and went to the podium wanting to talk about her bill to ban smoking in all places of employment. What does that mean? What's a workplace? And so I went to the podium and I said, I'd like to know how you define a workplace. And she goes, well, what do you mean? How do I define it? It's where people have to work. They shouldn't have to be subjected to secondhand smoke. I said, well, yeah, but okay, what's a workplace though? I said, so let me ask you this. What about the guy who has an apartment with a balcony and he smokes on his balcony? He pays rent to be there. It's his home. But the guy who is the groundskeeper for the apartment complex, he's working right outside there trimming the bushes. Isn't that his workplace? I mean, are we now blowing secondhand smoke into his workplace, even though it's outside? Well, now you're just making stuff up. I said, well, I'm not. I said, so what about this? How about the guy, and I don't cotton to it much, but how about the guy who has his dream has been to own his own bar, and he knows he won't make a living if he says you can't smoke here? Or the guy who wants to own a cigar bar, for that matter. What about that? Are you just going to say, but that's their workplace? Well, now you're just picking. I said, no, I'm not, what I'm trying to tell you is you got a big government bill that's going so far down into people's business that you have no idea where it's going to end because someone's going to redefine it in ways you had never intended. Anyway, got another one like that right now. Here's one for you. So State Representative Barbara Drummond, Democrat out of Mobile, she filed a bill in the Alabama House just last week. Yellowhammer has a story on it. just filed a bill last week that would charge parents if their child brings an unsecured firearm to school. Okay, I got issues with this. Now, I am totally of the mind that gun owners have to be responsible. You cannot just have loaded firearms laying around willy-nilly. When my grandkids come, we make sure things are locked up. When my kids were young, I had trigger locks, I had, you know, other safety measures. But all that to say, y'all, how do we put a Class C felony onto a parent who had no idea the kid had absconded with daddy's gun? How many people do you know of who thought they were locking up the liquor cabinet and their teenager got in there anyway, right? If a gun walks out the house, can you charge the parents with a felony? Well, I guess, you know, if there's some complicitness, if there's a parent who said, here, Junior, take this to school, you'll be cool. I mean, that's a bad deal. But here's the thing. She says that the bill makes common sense. Sure she does. She reiterated in the article that a parent would only be charged if it was proven the student had the firearm because it was, quote, not properly secured by the parent. So now I have to ask the question, second and third order effects here. What does not properly secured even mean? Are they going to mandate a certain type of lockbox? Are they going to mandate that it has to have biometrics so the child can't open it? Are they going to mandate that the gun has to have a trigger lock on it? Are they going to tell you that it has to be remained unloaded at all times and that ammunition has to be stored in a different room? Where does it end? What does properly secured mean? And that's what they're not thinking of. Nanny state bills like this are just, I see a good idea and I want to stop something or make something happen. It's also what I would call somewhat of an unfunded mandate. You're going to put this bill in place and you're going to make people have to spend money on something to comply with your neat notions. All right, next story, 1819 News broke a story, man. Boomer, do you remember the thing about the mayor from Montgomery got caught saying some pretty foul stuff on the tape? He's nodding his head to me. So Mayor Stephen Reed of Montgomery, liberal dude, he apparently got caught on a tape dissing on Governor Ivey, cussing about how much he doesn't need to worry about trying to please Maxwell Air Force Base, which is a major, major economic force in the Montgomery area. And then, oh, by the way, even though he's a black man, he had a pretty profane tirade about how he didn't need the black vote. And it was a pretty awful recording. It was so bad that 1819 broke it, and the other news outlets realized they had to cover it. And then it got so bad that Mayor Stephen Reed realized he had to address it. I mean, when you get all that to happen, you know you've broken a story and they're having to dance to your tune. Well, kudos to 1819 News. They got that story. Well, then the mayor came out and had his little press conference where he said, it was a setup. Whole thing's taken out of context. No, not really. Those were your words. We heard your voice. Well, there was a guy who was trying to manipulate me, trying to dun me for money, and he thought he was going to get some money out of the city and extort us. Anyway, he went on, and he named a guy he thought it was. Now the story turns around. Said guy he thought it was is suing the mayor. Suing the mayor, claiming he has suffered damage to his reputation, seeking damages in terms of pecuniary and exemplary form. That's punitive damages. This is going to be interesting. But nonetheless, Mayor Reed got himself a little legal action going because he didn't know how to take responsibility for his own actions. Classic. All right, I got a couple more stories. Not sure if we'll get to them here. Well, you know what? I will. I got probably 1 minute. Here's one state. I don't have 1 minute. How long do I have? Never mind. Oh, my gosh. Okay. All right. Well, you know what? I'll cover it later, maybe with Jeff Poor, who's calling in momentarily. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got local, state, national, sometimes international, and we cover all those issues like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, hey, by the way, real quickly, just a bit of breaking news going on right this moment. Just started a press conference with Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin. Speaking about the major intel leaks that have come out of the Pentagon, that have got our both our adversaries and our allies all riled up. Some are saying that this leak is worse than the Snowden affair a few years back. So more to come on that one. We'll talk about it probably at some point during the week. But anyway, that's going on as we speak. All right. Well, I'm in number one of the triple dipper home fries. Boomer, you got that sound effect? I just like it. Just hit that sound effect. Yes. So we're doing home fries, talking about home front news right here in Alabama. Got to remember where we live and talk about our communities, our state capital, things that are happening in Montgomery down on Goat Hill. And somebody who's been very in tune with that, our friend Jeff Poor, who comes on quite frequently. Jeff is the host of the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5 down yonder in Mobile. And he's also, by the way, the executive editor for 1819 News. So without further ado, Jeff Poor, how you doing?
Doing well. Good afternoon.
Good day to you, sir. Hey, you had me on your show this morning. I thought, you know what? That fits my triple dipper for the day. So I just said, come on, man. Let's talk about Montgomery stuff. Appreciate you having me on this morning, by the way.
Hey, we always appreciate you coming on.
Okay, now that all the platitudes are over. But no, hey, Montgomery, you and I were talking a little bit about nanny state type bills. And I mentioned a moment ago about Barbara Drummond's bill, the whole deal of maybe making a felony for parents whose kid takes a gun to school. But there's other stuff going on down there right now, too. Your perspective on the nanny state and why aren't Republicans stopping it just like dead in its tracks?
I mean, is it wrong for me to be cynical about this? And they're just looking to kill time until they pass the budgets. So they're letting all these kind of, I don't want to call them inconsequential because they're very consequential bills, but they're not exactly bread and butter, hyped up Republican policy type issues that they run on, right? Like what Republican in Alabama runs on, hey, we're going to pass, I want to get to Montgomery and pass a law that says you can't touch your cell phone while you're driving. Or how about this one? You got kids in the back seat under 14? I don't know why 14, but how about we ban you smoking? Those of you who raise on secondhand smoke, we don't. You turn out too conservative or something. I don't know, but we're gonna ban. I mean, it's not exactly like Republican type stuff here, is it?
No, and you know, I was talking earlier, like for instance, the Barbara Drummond gun bill. I mean, it talks about she believes that it would be okay if the parent could prove the gun was properly secured, and my point is, where does it end? What does properly secured even mean? Well, you got the vaping and smoking in the car. What if the windows are down? Does it matter? What if you're driving a Jeep with no top on it? Does it matter? And then on top of that, why 14? And then you mentioned not even touching your phone. How many people use the you know Google Maps while you're driving or Waze? And where do they come up with this? And I just, at some point, they have to recognize people are going to have some measure of self-determination.
Well, and this, it's just like we look, you can tell you how far society is out of whack, Senator, because I think it's this. I just think putting government as the higher power, the government's going to fix all our woes. It just becomes that, and we get complacent about just morals and ethics and things that are important, more secular. So we need, but we do still yearn for a higher power. So we make government that, and we expect government to feed our kids. And now police are in car behavior.
Well, you know, if government is your god, you will be let down at every turn. There's this,
right. It's a man-made institution, and these people that just like it's like anytime there's one of these shootings, and you have these lefties that mock thoughts and prayers. you know, don't underestimate the power of prayer is what I think. But, you know, well, I don't care about your big magic Jesus in the sky. We need action now. We need law now. Well, you gotta trust the same people that brought us to DMV, the same people that bring us everything about government that's terrible, that is lacking. The people that brought you the transportation system that makes you sit in traffic, that's your higher power, and you're going to make fun of us for having something, having a religion in our life? I mean, give me a break.
Yeah, it's every day, too. And, you know, now some of these bills I know are not going to see the light of day. I've been down there and seen what I would call frivolous bills, and I've also seen times when a Democrat will say, I'm going to stand up there and filibuster your bill unless you let me at least get up there and talk about mine for a few minutes, because it's important to me and my constituents, which is never true. But nonetheless, I've seen those things happen. But I'm just still amazed that there are times when people who are in office believe that their office gives them the right to literally control every aspect of people's lives.
Well, and people seem to be okay with it. It's almost like they need somebody. We have a society that needs somebody to tell us what to do. It needs that structure, I guess. I don't like it. I don't like this culture. But I think that the Alabama legislature is just, especially with an all Republican body, super majority in both chambers, is maybe a product of our culture right now.
Well, maybe so. But hey, listen, I want to switch gears. You wrote an article, and since you're the one who wrote it, I figure you can talk about it. Came out today. State Rep Stringer is proposing that retired law enforcement, ex-military, are allowed to be armed at public schools. I guess, is he talking about his faculty, or is he talking about as like SROs, kind of like voluntary SROs? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, he's talking about faculty, which is this. Right now, I mean, if you're a former police officer, for whatever reason, you find yourself in a classroom. I don't know how often this happens, but I suppose that it could. Why not let that person be armed? Why not make that available to a school? You know, especially in some of these schools. Maybe it's like a rural or not so rural school, but you have a former law enforcement officer, or even someone who served in the military, familiar, that's capable. Maybe they're teaching shop, or they're coaching football, or whatever it may be. Let them carry. Because it's just one of those things. It closes a gap. It's not a fix all, right? But it ought to be on the books, at least, to be allowed.
Yeah, I don't argue that fact. I think this could make good sense. In fact, you look at it. I mean, it's kind of maddening that one of the places where there's like a no gun zone is a military base. So much micromanagement there. But going back to this issue, you got somebody with military training, you got somebody's former law enforcement, and they're now working in a classroom or in some kind of support staff role at the school. Why could they not be armed? If you need to get them recertified, do it. But Stringer is from down there in your area, down in Citronelle. Have you had him on your show about this yet?
Yeah, so he's on every other week on my show, and this is what we talked about. So Representative Stringer, though, he's former police chief in Satsuma.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he got sideways with the sheriff down here. He was working for the sheriff since joining the legislature. The sheriff, Sam Cochran, fired him because of his support for constitutional carry.
I remember that.
Big controversy, but Stringer's bounced back, and constitutional carry is now the law.
That's exactly right. I'd forgotten he was that guy. Yeah, sheriff, how you like me now? I guess he doesn't have to vote on any bills the sheriff cares about, does he? Well, that could be interesting. So what else we got going on down in Montgomery this week right now? Have you got anything that you're targeting right now from 1819 side or your own show?
Yeah, I'll be there tomorrow. I usually sit in on Wednesdays. Actually going to do the show in Stathagen's office tomorrow for the day. But a critical race theory is coming back. That's Ed Oliver's bill, and I think Barfoot's going to bring it in the Senate. The other one I'd watch for Thursday is kind of almost a formality at this point, but that's going to be the big economic incentives day. I think it passes, but it's aside from the budgets, you talk to these members, and it's the most important thing they are going to do. They will tell you this legislative session, which is just beyond comprehension to me. But it is really, really important to them, really, really important to the governor. And I don't like the look, but I don't think they're going to have any problem getting it done.
I know some of those economic incentive bills that they're doing are just renewals of previous bills, although they're lifting the cap on them and that kind of stuff. But is there any rumor that some major you know, employment possibilities are hanging out there waiting to see if we're going to pass these first? Are we hearing anything about like the next Mercedes plant or Toyota Mazda coming to town as long as we get these passed? What's the deal?
All I hear is just little small ball, small potato projects, Senator. And obviously, we're not allowed to know. We will know when they make the announcement because it's proprietary. They don't want to give away any negotiating tactics. That and they did okay with Toyota Mazda up until the very end. If you just kind of watch what's going on there, but I seriously I do think I do think that for whatever reason this is you cannot speak ill of this or face the some kind of retaliation from some power above, be it the power company or be it leadership in either chamber. If you oppose these, they're coming for you. And I would like to know why. Maybe it'll all be cleared up when it's said and done.
Well, you know, some of these incentive packages, and I've told you on your own show, I'm not truly opposed to them. I think they have to be carefully crafted. But I also get a little bit concerned when I start seeing things like the Business Council of Alabama, the BCA, is now headed up by a Democrat. And I look at that and go, what's happening?
Yeah, it's like all this DEI, ESG stuff has really, really made its way into the business community. Is there any protection for the taxpayer against that nonsense if they start trying to introduce that into some of these economic development projects? I don't want us subsidizing that. I don't know about you guys, but no. I would like to know that, but we're not even allowed to ask.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Well, more to come. I just hope we have some Republicans down there with some chutzpah who will actually ask the hard questions, and I'm a little concerned that we don't. I think right now there's so much of a go-along to get along. That and I mean, maybe we'll see grocery tax, you know, repealed. Maybe we'll see some school choice. Maybe we'll see some tax reform. But right now, I just feel like it's how can we go along to get along, and what kind of micromanagement bills can we see to the floor?
Well, one last thing, and you might be a little long here, but a lot of your former colleagues are saying the same thing to me. What I'm texting right now as we speak, but like. It is what a feckless, scaredy cat group in Montgomery right now. And some will come on the show that I do in Mobile and say as much. Dick Brubaker, very outspoken. Trent Pittman, very outspoken, too lately. But they just, I'm surprised at how many people are just looking at what's going on there and shaking their head like, what happened?
Yeah, what happened? A bunch of the conservatives left. In 2018, a third of the legislature who had been rocking the AEA's world, cutting back on budget, streamlining government, and doing those things we said we'd do, we all decided that we had met the mark, and we went home. And dang, look at us now.
Look at the leadership. Schofield and Reed were right there with you guys, and now they're just kind of – it's a totally different environment.
More to come, brother. We got to hold our feet to the fire. All right, man, I did run long, but I appreciate you. Thanks for making time this afternoon, all right?
Hey, thank you for having me on.
All right, Jeff Poor from the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5 and Executive Editor, 1819 News. Y'all check him out. All right, Boomer, take us to the break, brother. We'll do that right now. We'll come right back, about to change gears, leave behind the home fries, start talking about China rising. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative. Just plain right. Saving the world. One soundbite at a time. I'm going to go to the text line for a minute, Boomer. We got a bunch of textures came in. So just covering certain things that have been said throughout the show so far, we're already halfway through the show. How did this happen? Did you speed up the clock?
It was quick. I sped it up.
It was the home fries, man. I got hungry and forgot what I was doing. All right. So Ron from Tuscumbia just texted in. He said, as far as that hands-free bill goes, you know, that one bill we were talking about where someone's got a bill down in Montgomery that says you can't touch your phone while you're driving. Can't touch it. Don't you touch that. Don't you try to get your Spotify list going on your phone. Anyway, Ron from Tuscumbia says, as far as the hands-free bill goes, I'm all for it. I'm a motorcycle rider. I can't tell you how many times I've almost been run over by someone with a cell phone stuck to their head or looking down, texting, no difference than a drunk driver. I get it, Ron, but how do you enforce this? You're going to tell police officers you can pull somebody over, you can ticket them, you can take your time because you saw them touching their phone. I think it could be something you could, if you could find evidence that they were a distracted driver, maybe, and cause an accident. But if they're just driving down the road talking on their phone, what the heck? Marcus from Huntsville says, how about we repeal the tax on all groceries covered by WIC? That's the Women's Infant and Children's Program, for a start anyway. Marcus, good point. It's exactly what they're talking about right now. The bill that has traction on repealing the grocery tax does it that very way. And it's a bill being floated right now by the two budget chairmen, Senator Arthur Orr and State Representative Danny Garrett. So, yeah, if they're for it, then it has more chance than it's ever had. And it does it exactly what you just described. Marcus, thanks for the text. Where else have I got here? Tony from Piedmont's apologizing because he's been commenting on everything. I do not mind, Tony. Just keep them coming, brother. This doesn't bother me a bit. Gina from Athens regarding touching the phone. Says, what if you have to call 911 and you can't touch your phone? Interesting point. Have to break the law in order to call for the law. Interesting. Gina, great question. Then they say, ma'am, we saw you touching your phone. Yes, I was calling for you. I don't know. What else we got? Yeah, so Moon Pie from Madison texted in and said, next time we do the Grand Council with Dale Jackson, ask him why he seems to... And we talked about it last week. That's how I became aware of the bill that I talked about a minute ago. Barbara Drummond, Representative Barbara Drummond, has a bill that would hold parents accountable if a child brings a quote-unquote unsecured firearm to school. Moon Pie points out he believes that Dale Jackson is in it for principle, but he doesn't agree with the bill at all. And I agree with you. I disagreed with him last week on the air, and I'll do it again if I have to. We got a new texter, Melinda from Decatur. We're glad you're in the system with us. And then Danny from Decatur says, they keep wanting to pass laws about guns. The bad guys don't care about laws. How about laws to add a mandatory 5 to 10 years added on to any conviction using a firearm during a crime? Well, not a bad idea. We'll just have to wait and see, brother. I mean, it just gets weird. At some point, you think there's no way they can keep running another bill and then think of another bill. It's a feeding frenzy. Now, some of those bills, by the way, have no chance. They don't have a snowball's chance in Hades of ever getting passed. I've seen sometimes too where people will drop a bill in just to tell their constituents they did. Other times I've seen bills that get dropped in and they're there to make a point, but they don't have any intention of pursuing them. And then I've seen other bills that are dropped in and they do it without ever consulting with anybody else to see whether they can have some support, and the bill dies on the vine because they never had support and they didn't bother to check it out. We'll see. All right, folks, we're going to come right back. Number two in the Triple Dipper, China Rising. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. All you Right Side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right.
Hey,
And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. Argue with me. I dare you, Alabama. I'm talking about way down south of Birmingham to up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back on over to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi thrown in just for good measure. All right. We finished at number one of the Triple Dipper, Home Fries, jumping in the number two. China rising. And I'm not going to, you know what, I'm not going to pull punches on this. I'm going to tell you that I think one of the most dynamic, fluid environments we have right now is in U.S. foreign policy as it relates to China and China as it relates to U.S. And I'm talking about this is what many experts believe is the next potential for great war. They call it great war in terms of its size. It's the buzzwords, great war, you know, near peer, that's what they are. They're a near peer adversary. And all this to say, China's not playing, all right? And I look at it and you know, part of me thinks, we're rocking along. You know, what's going to happen? I don't know what's going to happen, but, you know, we're just rocking along. It's more than that now. It's more than just more of the same. We are seeing an increased level of rhetoric. Yeah, but Phil, nobody died from rhetoric. Well, they do when they have guns attached to it. So the increased level of rhetoric, and then, by the way, an increased level of what I would call forward-leaning posture, a forward-leaning posture in a dynamic sort of military exercise going on that's got everybody on edge. So I'm not going to try and be a doomsayer and tell you we're going to war with China, but what I'm saying is do not underestimate anything in the situation right now, especially given the fact that Biden's in the White House. Lindsey Graham, who I sometimes agree with, sometimes don't, Lindsey Graham came out the other day and said that Afghanistan has emboldened China. China believes that, you know, after that debacle, that the store is open and they can come in and take whatever they want. Well, that's exactly right. And I think China also recognizes that on the horizon, we don't know whether Biden will survive a re-election campaign or, for that matter, who would come in after him. I think they're looking right now at a strategically kind of, I don't want to say disenfranchised, what's the word I'm looking for? A strategically, you know, broken, if you will, leadership in the U.S. We have a level of incompetence as opposed to competence when it comes to applying the full dynamics of foreign policy, all of which, and I've said it before on the show, use the acronym DIME, D-I-M-E. It stands for Diplomatic Information or Intelligence, Military and Economic. All four of those things concerted together, done in equal and unmitigated shares, are what you use to project your foreign policy. And right now, we're failing in it. I'm not sure. What does Antony Blinken do for a job? I'm sure there's stuff that he's done that we can't see, and I have no idea the number of meetings he's in every day and whatever. I am not inspired by our current Secretary of State. I am certainly not inspired by our current leadership in the Pentagon, and I am certainly not inspired by the White House. Well, there's the majority of your dime right there. So all that to say, with China and Taiwan, and if you're looking at the map, there's about a 100-mile-wide, it's called the Taiwan Strait, that runs of water that runs between China and Taiwan. The island nation of Taiwan has about 24 million people. It is a strategic ally in many ways. It is an economic ally. It is a democracy where they freely elect their leadership. I don't, you know, it's like Ukraine. People are like, well, Ukraine's got corruption problems. Well, do you like Russia? How much better is Russia's problems when it comes to corruption and political influence? Well, the same is true here. Well, I don't know about Taiwan. They may have some problems. Do you like China? Is China preferable? The Communist Party, the CCP? So anyway, the bottom line is this. We have to begin thinking about the way forward. Well, for years, the policy has been what we call a one-China policy. We do not contest China openly as a matter of policy, that they believe that Taiwan is really theirs. See, years and years ago, when the communists took over, the non-communists basically defected to the island of Taiwan, and they established their own democracy and said they were separate. China has refused to accept that. Meanwhile, China struggles under communism. Taiwan flourishes under a capitalist democracy. So the United States has had this kind of sly, wink, wink, nod, nod, one China policy. How? We're not going to say that. We're not going to say you're separate. We're not going to say they're a nation, but we do like them better. And we will help them. And we'll sell them arms. And we'll set special trade agreements with them. And we'll come sail through the Taiwan Strait and stare evil daggers over there at China if you dare to bow up. Well, it's gotten worse. So within the forward-leaning posture that we have right now, the One China policy is enacted by what we call, and here's another term for you, strategic ambiguity. What does that mean? Strategic ambiguity means we don't ever openly say, we will come to China's defense or to Taiwan's defense if China invades, that we will be there. We'll fight for you. We don't say that. We just leave it open that we're going to sell you arms and you're our ally. Although the crazy thing was, the position of the United States has always been, we don't openly contest the One China policy. We do not go past strategic ambiguity until President Biden, who can't remember what he had for breakfast, says, yeah, we will. What? And his administration has started walking it back. Oh, no, we have not revoked the One China policy. What time is they serving pudding? That's what they meant to say. So all that to say, we are now right this moment, today, in probably the highest level of tension and detente that we have seen when it comes to China and Taiwan. There are many who believe right now that China is sensing that they have a window of opportunity with the Biden administration, that they don't believe that Biden will follow through. They don't believe the Biden administration will be there for Taiwan. Meanwhile, China has to look at it and go, can we really take it? Because it's an island fortress. I mean, it's like trying to take England during World War II. It's an island fortress. It's the English Channel. I mean, you can swim across the English Channel. The Taiwan Strait's 100 miles wide. Can they take it? Probably. But it would not be a cakewalk. Do they want to risk that? Do they want to destroy the infrastructure that they really want because it would aid their economy? I don't know. Do they want to assert it as a matter of principle? Is Xi that crazy? Maybe. So here we are, strategic ambiguity, One China policy. Oh, Lord, Biden's president. Lloyd Austin is Secretary of Defense. Anthony Blinken is Secretary of State. And Xi is playing chess. And he's moving pieces right now. And I'm afraid that there are times when the Biden administration is playing checkers. Where are we as a nation with this? And while I don't believe that I'm ready to rush out and send troops and start, you know, beating the war drums and doing those kind of things, there has to be a measure of foreign policy posture that China respects, and right now it's not there. What is that? I think part of it has to be an official firm stance on what will happen if. Part of that also has to be finding a way to get the weapon systems to Taiwan that they've already paid for that have been slow-rolled under the Biden administration. And then, you know, next you have to look at what is happening on the diplomatic side. What could we do to China? If China decides to blockade Taiwan, can we blockade Middle East oil getting to China? Can we do something that would then make China sit back and go, oh man, this ain't worth the price? All said and done, we're beginning to see more and more out of the U.S. military's emphasis towards the Pacific region than we've seen maybe since World War II. There's been a whole lot focused on Europe and the Cold War with the former Soviet Union and NATO. Now we have the war in Ukraine. We had things in our own hemisphere that were crises. You know, we had the invasion of Panama. We had the invasion of Grenada. We had the Cuban Missile Crisis. We had the wars in the Middle East. With the exception of Vietnam, we haven't seen this much level of activity. Well, in Korea, this is different because it's on a scale that we haven't seen before. I will tell you this story out of Huntsville. You know, Material Command, Army Material Command headquartered in Huntsville. Defense News has a piece right here. Came out last Friday, actually. The U.S. Army is preparing to put its logistics tail to the test in the Indo-Pacific, considered the most challenging operational theater in the world. Why is that? Because of the amount of distance between our allies. You know, trying to get something to Australia, New Zealand, it's pretty significant. Having to stage on islands like in the Philippines, it's pretty significant. Says this summer, the service will hold a large-scale exercise in Australia dubbed Talisman Sabre. As part of the two-week training event that starts in late July, the Army will deliver massive amounts of equipment across challenging terrain and large... So basically what's happening is this. The 8th Theater Sustainment Command is going to basically put on a logistics mission that is bigger than any they've ever done, is what we're hearing, with the outside of war. Designed to plus up materiel and equipment and manpower to the Australia area, to regions in Australia. And then not only that, but get them to port, offload them, and get them 100 miles inland and try to do that in a controlled fashion on an epic scale. That's all starting up here pretty soon. But what that tells me, though, is we ain't playing. I've heard from somebody who knows, who's on the inside of this, that we're going to start seeing massive amounts of emphasis on force modernization coming up pretty soon. Why? Well, number one, we probably need it. Some of our platforms, like the Abrams tank, the Paladin is pretty new, the artillery pieces, some of our aircraft, they're getting kind of dusty. I mean, they're still highly effective, but they're older platforms. And so we're going to start seeing far more emphasis on force modernization and on things like logistics trains over long distances to include water. And then, so the 25th Infantry Division will be working with the Sustainment Command, and this is going to be a big deal. And so some of y'all are going, I don't get it. What's happening now? Well, you can't, if you can't get beans and bullets where the fighters are, the war comes to a grinding halt. So what they're doing right now is making sure they have the capabilities, the training, and the experience to move massive logistics through the Indo-Pacific region. And that's starting now. All right, we're going to take a break right now. I'm sticking with this for a bit. China rising. I just think it's so important we break this down and look at it and what China's saying, what we're saying. And there's been a lot of rhetoric on both sides that is stiffer, stronger than I've seen in maybe ever. You guys stay tuned. We will be right back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Hey, listen, got some text messages. I'll get them real quick. In fact, one of those, wow. Hey, Boomer, check the message from Mike from Muscle Shoals. Please, got a technical thing there about the show, if you would, just check that out. John from Huntsville says, if China goes to war with Taiwan, I already know who's going to lose, the American taxpayers. I already know who's going to lose the war between Russia and Ukraine, the American taxpayers. I get it, but at the same time, you have to look at it and think, what do we lose if China's allowed just to invade? Because right now, the microchips that our society runs on, the vast majority of those come from, you guessed it, Taiwan. 15% of the GDP for Taiwan is based in the microchip industry. 60% of the world's microchips come from Taiwan. 90% of the most advanced microchips the world uses come from Taiwan. It's one of those things where, daggum, if you can't get microchips from Taiwan, you can't build new cars, you can't have medical equipment advances, you can't have cell phones. It's a mess. We've got way too much. And I look at it and go, why didn't somebody see that coming? But nonetheless, the curb on the market is Taiwan. China knows that. So we got sufficient interest to make this real dicey. Samad the truck driver, I mentioned earlier about Xi playing chess, Biden playing checkers. He says, nah, Biden's playing 52-card pickup. Glenn from Bluntsville says, China is playing chess and Biden's playing tiddlywinks. Which Brian from Huntsville said the same thing. Biden playing tiddlywinks. Checkers is far too complex, he said. Wow. Anyway, all right, listen, there's more text on here that I didn't get to, but let me just jump back over to the topic. In fact, wait, one more real quick. Daryl from Tony. Oh, I can't, you know what, I can't, this is too long. I have to get back to you. Daryl, thanks for the text. I'll get on it. So Taiwan is warning this. Fox News story yesterday. Taiwan is warning a Chinese misstep, in their words, could lead to uncontrollable World War outbreak. That's high rhetoric, all right? And Taiwan has an interest in making sure that the world sees them as vital and needed. But Taiwan is sounding alarms over Chinese military drills, it says, that could mistakenly spark an uncontrollable war. You got to watch those incidents, those things that, you know, you get kind of gamey. You're pointing loaded weapons at each other, and next thing you know, somebody sneezes and it goes off, and it's a whole new game at that point. Taiwan's foreign minister, Joseph Wu, said the Chinese military exercises this couple of days have been very serious. If you look at the sorties of Chinese Air Force, together with the ships, they're coming very close to Taiwan. Any accident could spark an uncontrollable war between Taiwan and China, and if other countries try to intervene, it might be the start of a war of great scale. So here's the deal. What has happened most recently that has provoked the Chinese, again, is we have a delegation of senior leaders, Speaker of the House Kevin McCarthy and Representative McCall and several others, who all made a congressional delegation trip to Taiwan and met with the president of Taiwan, and that just inflames the passions of China. You're like, you want to say, Xi, calm down. We've been meeting like this. All right, they don't want to hear it. They're beyond it, they say, China. They don't want us doing that because it makes it look like we're saying that the whole strategic ambiguity is not there anymore. And they refuse to believe that someone would go to China to meet with their president instead of coming to Beijing to meet with Xi because they believe Taiwan is part of them. So what's happened? Military exercises on a scale we have not seen before. Now, last August was bad when Pelosi went over. China did this then. They're doing it even more now. Story on Breitbart. And also the story on Fox News. I'll do them both kind of together. We're seeing massive amount of aircraft. So right now there's a dividing line. Picture that Taiwan Strait, 100 miles wide. 50 miles in is the dividing line. That's called the median, the Taiwan median. And you just don't go across it. It's like the, hey, don't cross this line. You stay on yours. There's no real fence, but everybody knows where it is. And China has been crossing it in a big way. China sent nearly a dozen warships and 70 fighter jets towards Taiwan on Monday. Many of those crossed over the median. 35 of the detected aircraft crossed the median of the Taiwan Strait, entered Taiwan's self-declared air defense identification zone. 11 warships belonging to China's Navy are also out there. So we've got that's the third day in a row. They're actually blockading. They're practicing what it would take to blockade China. They're surrounding it on four sides. Picture Taiwan roughly just in your mind as a big rectangle. They're blockading all four corners and what it would take to stop incoming and outgoing. Well, they're saying they're doing it as what they call a combat readiness patrol. So in other words, they're not saying, don't worry about us. We're just out here testing our mettle. We're not doing it. No, they're saying, yeah, we're doing this in terms of combat readiness in case we have to invade Taiwan. Well, it goes on from there, and we'll come back. Wait till you hear what Senator Lindsey Graham said. Now, he's all hawkish. He's the first one to say, let's send troops. What he said on this one? Wow. All right, folks, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We're in number two, China Rising. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. Right Side Ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, covering down on all the issues. And like that dude just said, solid conservative, just plain right, hour number three. And before I go any further, I got to tell you guys, the Elm Foundation, one of our sponsors. So the Elm Foundation does some pretty cool stuff, and I would encourage you to check it out. I mean, they've got a heart for people. And it comes through in what they do. ELM, E-L-M, stands for Expect Little Miracles. And this is not a program like the government where they just throw money at stuff and see if it sticks. No, this is a program with a 501c3, a nonprofit charitable organization that's out there really getting in the weeds, helping people get off the streets, find productivity and meaning in life again. And giving them not just the skills or the certification or the opportunities, but then walking through it with them and giving them accountability. Like, hey, you got to check in with us. We're gonna walk through this with you, but you gotta hit these milestones. We gotta work with you, and you gotta work with us. That's an incredible program, almost like a mentoring situation, and I love that. So just check out their website, Elm, ELMHSV, as in Elm Huntsville. That's where they are. ELMHSV, ElmHSV.org. It's a .org. Check them out, and if you wind up going to one of their meetings or helping out with something they do or making a donation or whatever else, tell them you heard about it on a Right Side Radio. Oh, and by the way, very cool, donations. Any donation you give to them goes straight to programs that help people because all of their administrative costs are covered by a single benefactor who makes sure they don't have to raise money for their payroll. They're just working with your charitable dollars for the people they help. Anyway, there you go. Elm Foundation, ELMHSV.org. Back to China Rising. This is no fooling. This is serious business. This is the kind, I look at this like Boomer and I were talking off the air, Boom, about that balloon that flew over, what?
Oh, yeah.
What was that, a month and a half ago?
Yeah, about.
We still, by the way, have not seen what it was toting when they shot it down.
Right.
Where is that?
They're keeping it under wraps.
Apparently so.
They don't want us to get too mad.
I just saw a novel the other day that I haven't read yet. It's like a Clancy spy thriller type novel.
Yeah.
And the main character dealt with the electrical grid being taken out. Can you imagine if one of those balloons, and I'm not trying to be like this conspiracy theory, you know, I'm just saying, why was that balloon there? Gathering intelligence for what? How about just seeing, first of all, whether they can make it work? And if you fly one of those balloons quietly over at 60,000 feet and it carries an EMP, an electromagnetic pulse weapon, or a nuclear blast airburst that just takes down the power grid, we're in the Stone Age. All of a sudden, you can't get money out of the bank. You can't get medical help. You can't. Some cars won't work. You have the inability to use your computers. Cell phones go down. I mean, it's like The Walking Dead without the zombies.
Ooh.
I'm just saying.
Well, and the fact of it that we didn't even notice it till it hit Montana.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, and who's to say they wouldn't send hundreds of balloons over,
yeah,
just to divert us or whatever.
Only one of them or two of them matters, but the rest of them are out there taking up space
and using up our missiles that cost $250,000.
Yeah, easily. Well, I mean, all this to say, China is serious business. They just floated a spy balloon over our nation, and by the way, it was navigable. They were flying that thing. It wasn't floating, gathering meteorological data. No. They were flying it over key infrastructure and then turning it back around, sometimes doing figure eights. I mean, they knew exactly what they were doing, and this was a quiet attempt to see how much they could gather up without anybody knowing. China is probing right now. More than we've ever seen in our lifetimes, China is literally probing right now. There's a thing we used to, in the infantry, we used to call recon by fire, and that's where fire a few shots, see if the enemy answers, and they'll tell you where they are by doing so. Oh, yeah. China is basically doing a recon by fire right now. Let's float a balloon over, see how they react. Let's blockade Taiwan for a few days, see how they react. Let's make statements. Let's line ourselves up with Brazil and Russia and try to downgrade the dollar and see how they react. Let's see what happens on and on. China's probding. Well, Senator Lindsey Graham, long known for being very hawkish, in his words, he would support sending American troops to Taiwan. I think that's extreme right now, but when I read what he's got to say, it is kind of interesting. So in his words, he says the U.S. should aggressively train Taiwanese forces so they can fight like Ukrainians. Send F-16 jets to the island, install nuclear-tipped missiles and submarines, dispatch American troops to defend the nation. Okay, take a breath, Senator Graham, take a breath. But I do believe we better have a forward-leaning posture on how to react should things go badly. Graham said Congress needs to ask itself, should we have a defense agreement with the island of Taiwan? Because we don't. He says, but yes, I'd be very much open to the U.S. forces defending Taiwan because it's in our national security interest to do so, says he. Graham said he believes the Chinese Communist Party in Beijing is setting the stage for the possible blockade of Taiwan. And I told you earlier, and the quotes are in here in this article, 60% of the world's semiconductors, 90% of the most advanced ones, all come through Taiwan. What you got?
I was going to say, remind people where to get their the articles. Because you said it's in this article.
Oh, that's a great point.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but no, that's a good point.
That's a great point. Perfect. I mean, you put them up there. We might have to tell people, right? Okay, so every morning when I'm resourcing the show, I'm finding all the articles that you hear me rattling paper for, right? I send an entire triple dipper with all the resource articles to Boomer. He then puts it together in a format that I can print out and highlight and do all the things I do for the show. But what we realized recently was more than once people would say, man, where was that article? What was the one you read out about so-and-so? How about that article, like the third or fourth one you did in the triple dipper? Anyway, if you go to our website, rightsideradio.org, if you go to our website, go to the live stream page, you can scroll down. There's the live stream of the show. There's the audio live stream of the show. And down at the bottom, it says resources. Click on that. It takes you to today's triple dipper. Every article that I refer to, and some I don't even get to, are all linked on there. You can go find any one of those articles. Thank you, Boomer. Good point. Senator Lindsey Graham, back to that again. He said, what would I do to deter a blockage of Taiwan? I'd let the Chinese know, first of all, if you blockade Taiwan, you're going to have a hard time getting oil from the Middle East. There's that. He said, I would move war forces to South Korea and Japan. I would put nuclear-tipped cruise missiles on our submarines all over the world like Russians did. He said, I would make sure they understand that Xi and Putin are the problem, not Taiwan. And he goes on to basically say strategic ambiguity is not working. China, after Afghanistan, believes the store is open. You can go in and take whatever you want on Biden's watch. All right, that's tough talk. That's puffy rhetoric. But I'm going to tell you right now, the rhetoric coming out of China has been equally as bad, talking about how they will go to war if necessary. And that's been the last 24 hours. Congressman or Michael McCaul from Texas says the island nation of Taiwan is not where it needs to be in terms of having the capabilities it needs to repel an invasion from the communist China. So McCaul was just there, and he believes that basically the weapons they've paid for, that we should be getting them to them. Kind of hard to argue. They paid for them. And he points out in this article, which is found on Daily Wire, that there's really not enough there for Taiwan to truly defend a major assault by one of the world's great superpowers. Well, superpowers, leave off the great. McCaul's remarks, it says, come as other top Republican lawmakers have also been warning on recent Sunday shows that the U.S. needs to increase its support of Taiwan to prevent war from breaking out. He says they're not where they need to be. If we're going to have deterrence for peace, we need to get these weapons to Taiwan. He says, I sign off on all foreign military weapon sales. 22 weapon systems over 3 years ago have yet to be given to Taiwan after they paid for them. Really? McCaul, echoing recent remarks made by Speaker Kevin McCarthy, added that it was in the best interest of the U.S. and the world that Russia loses in Ukraine because that alone would serve as a strong deterrent against China invading Taiwan. Well, this thing's going to keep on packing, y'all. I'm just telling you, there's effort right now, and I'm going to come back from this break And I'll wrap it up by telling you what Macron says. So French President Macron literally had some... aren't we allies? Last I checked, we were. Didn't we save their raggedy selves in World War II? I'm pretty sure. Well, yeah, we'll tell you what Macron had to say after meeting with China's President Xi as we close up on here on China Rising. Pay attention, y'all. It's getting dicey. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. Back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Going to wrap up this section on China Rising. And no fooling, I'm not trying to be an alarmist. This is a major, major, major international foreign policy, military policy story. This one bears watching. And the level of rhetoric and the level of activity backing up the rhetoric is at levels we haven't seen before. I got to tell you, too, I got a bunch of texters going right now. Appreciate all of y'all that text into the show, give us your input. John from Brownsboro may win the text battle today. John from Brownsboro says, with Ukraine as a major supplier in the world of grain and Taiwan a leading supplier of the world's tech industry, the question is, are China and Russia operating independently toward their own ends, or are they working in conjunction to devalue the dollar and the world economy and gain control of these commodities? Dang. John from Brownsboro. If I could have a maple bacon donut to hand you, I would, man. That one wins. But he's right. There are things at stake. People say, it's not in our national interest. Well, by God, what? Why would you say that? Is it in our national interest to let China take over part of the world that controls a huge piece of our economy? Is it in our best interest to stand idly by while Ukraine gets run over right next to NATO nations by a nuclear-based Russia? Anyway, and now, is everything perfect in it? No. Do I feel good about the Biden administration being in charge of all this? No. But I will say that I do not disagree that we have to see Russia lose and we have to see China thwarted. We have to. To maintain our position on the world stage, we have to. To be the America that we've known ourselves to be, for generations, we have to. For our economy to survive, we have to not have a devaluing of the U.S. dollar on the world stage. We have to. All right. We got stuff here. I'll skip that one. I've kind of talked about it already. House Foreign Affairs Committee, according to townhall.com, just to put a little more emphasis on it, House Foreign Affairs Committee Chairman Representative Michael McCaul warns of the possibility of U.S. troops having to be sent to Taiwan if China invades the country. His words. So it's not just Lindsey Graham. His words. If communist China invaded Taiwan, it would certainly be on the table and something that will be discussed by Congress and the American people. Are they prepared to do this? Is Taiwan worth it? He said, I can argue for a lot of reasons why it is. The move would represent a much different situation from Russia's invasion of Ukraine, where the U.S. sent billions of dollars but refused to send U.S. troops. Yeah, that's true. And it's anyway, kind of wrapping this up, you know, there are some feckless world leaders. Yeah, I'd get concerned about us having one of those ourselves. By the way, Boomer just pointed out to me a minute ago. So here we are. China is practicing its actual assaults on Taiwan, and President Biden just took a 4-day trip to Ireland. Ireland.
Yep. I think he just landed, I mean, not too long ago.
I feel certain there's something important going on to cause that to happen, but I don't know what it is.
Right.
So, yeah, that's happening. And Boomer just points out, and Gavin Newsom is becoming the lead Democrat to talk about policy and try to thwart the Republican regime. But then we got leaders like, you know, Justin Trudeau in Canada, whose parents were just great friends with Fidel Castro. And then we got Emmanuel Macron. Emmanuel Macron. So he just came out, racially said, you know, we shouldn't have to worry about what the U.S. wants to do. We shouldn't rely on the U.S., and we shouldn't be there. Here's what he said. I'll just read it to you. Amid reports that some countries are de-dollarizing, French President Emmanuel Macron suggested in a new interview that Europe should reduce its dependency on the United States. He said there's a great risk that Europe gets caught up in crises that are not ours, which prevents it from building its strategic autonomy. Well, good luck with that, NATO member. How are you going to feel about strategic autonomy if things go south for you? I got news. You be calling like you did last time. By the way, he's just finished. He's saying these comments as he's just leaving Beijing because he was there to meet with President Xi on a state visit. And Xi rolled out the red carpet, man. Xi made it a state visit with huge emphasis. And so Macron goes on to say in his interview with Politico, the paradox would be that overcome with panic, we believe we're just America's followers. The question Europeans need to answer is it in our best interest to accelerate a crisis on Taiwan? No. The worst thing would be to think that we Europeans must become followers on this topic and take our cue from the U.S. agenda and a Chinese overreaction. Wow. In other words, yeah, sorry, not sorry. We're for you, not for you. Okay, that is going on right now. But other European officials who were with Macron on the trip did not agree, just so you know. He's not speaking for Europe. So European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen said stability in the Taiwan Strait is of paramount importance and says she told Xi that during her meeting. The threat of the use of force to change the status quo, she said, is unacceptable. Well, goodness. Tell you what, I'll wrap this up on a call. I got about a minute and a half. Let me do that real quick. Line two, Mike from Harvest. Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Senator Williams. How are you, sir?
I'm good, man. What's on your mind?
Well, I just had a question. I realized that the Foreign Affairs Committee people want to get soldiers to Taiwan, and I think that's a good idea. My question is, how are they proposing to get them there once China's invaded?
Yeah, well, that's
the last set of war games the Navy did. They could stop the invasion, but it would cost us most of our fleet.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have a good answer for you on how they would do it. I think right now they're talking about doing heavy prepositioning of forces, looking at getting them on the ground first as a deterrent, looking at beefing them up in South Korea and Japan, and beefing up our naval and air presence in the Philippines, which we just signed an agreement with the Philippines for new basing. So yeah. I think the forward posture is what they're talking about as much as anything, but you're right. Once China's on the ground in Taiwan, it's kind of hard to go in.
Well, the other issue, too, is last I saw, we're below 300 ships, possibly even 200 ships, active ships in the Navy. So,
yeah,
and I think our
readiness posture is not where it needs to be right now, man. But that's true. Hey, Mike, the music's playing, brother. I got to go to a break. Thanks for the call.
No problem, sir. Thank you, sir.
All right, Boomer, take us to the break. We will do that. We'll come right back, and we're going to switch to triple dipper number three. Am I doing all three? I am. Kakistocracy, that's next. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Hey, all you Right Side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. And we're back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. covering down on some major ground across the most beautiful state in the nation. That would be Alabama. I'm talking about way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi, thrown in just for good measure. All right, we're moving to number three on the Triple Dipper. Man, I'm getting them all done today. But yeah, this one, this is that word. I love this word. I don't love what it means, but I love the word cacistocracy. So you may or may not be familiar with the word cacistocracy. If you're new to the show and you haven't heard it before, let me spell it just so you know. K-A-K-I-S-T-O-C-R-A-C-Y, cacistocracy. Pray tell, Phil, what is a cacistocracy? It's a government, is this a definition? A government led by the least competent of its citizens. Play that sound effect.
You're traveling through another dimension, a dimension not only of sight and sound, but of mind, a journey into a dreary society governed by its least suitable citizens. You are now entering the cacistocracy zone.
I kept seeing stories, and I thought, you know what, that's a stupid policy, or that's a stupid thing. Why would you do that? And I thought, you know what, I'm going to do a whole section that's called it cacistocracy. So here's a variety of stories. First of all, I will say this. I even asked Charlene the other night, where's Booty Judge been? Ain't nobody seen the Booty Judge. Has he been around? I don't know. Well, he's back in the news. So you'll be happy to know, FoxNews.com, that Booty Judge is being urged by members of the Democrat Party to get out there and do something about racist traffic enforcement. What? He's the Secretary of the Department of Transportation. You need to do something about racist traffic enforcement and move our nation closer to transit equity. What the frick does that even mean? They've got nothing else going on, apparently. So, yeah, more than two dozen Democrats, according to Fox News, have signed a letter calling on Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg to get out there and do what they describe as enforcing or to fix racist traffic enforcement. A group of 27 Democrats, including squad representatives Ayanna Pressley, Corey Bush, Jamal Bowman, and Ilhan Omar, sent the letter to Buttigieg on Thursday, demanding he condemn America's harmful traffic enforcement. Is it not enough he wants to get rid of racist roads? Don't you know? He's out there working hard to get rid of racist roads. The group wants Buttigieg to direct funds. Oh, say there's money attached. To direct funds from President Biden's bipartisan infrastructure law, because transit equity is about infrastructure, apparently. Don't you know that? On our nation's roads and highways, black motorists have experienced a disproportionate scrutiny and excessive force under the guise of traffic enforcement. As Secretary of the U.S. Department of Transportation, we urge you to condemn the status quo of traffic enforcement and develop reforms to reduce racial inequities in traffic stops. Okay. That's just, you got elected to Congress and this is what you do. Well, I don't know yet how he's responding. I haven't seen what he wants to do, although the article is quick to point out what I said earlier, that Buttigieg has previously said he wants to address racism built into our country's highways and roads and bridges, and said that the federal government had a moral responsibility to address systemic racism in our country's infrastructure. Whatever. Okay. Now, you know, they contend that there was, like, roads were driven right through the middle of, you know, certain demographics' neighborhoods. Okay, and so now we're blockaded. Is that what you're telling us? What an insult. All right, listen, that's cacistocracy if I ever heard it. Of course, that's part of the Biden administration and the squad, so yeah. Let me jump to another one. This is maddening. This is where you look at it and go, what is wrong with you people? Do you not understand that there are certain things that really, really fly in the face of our Constitution? We're finding right now, due to a FOIA request, Freedom of Information Act, that the FBI apparently used an undercover informant in the Catholic Church. What? Yes. I kid you not. House Judiciary Committee, according to the DailyCaller.com, House Judiciary Committee issued a subpoena to FBI Director Christopher Wray on Monday, requesting records related to its probe into the FBI's domestic violent extremism investigations against Catholic Americans. Really? Yeah. So the investigation was initiated after the leak of a January 23rd FBI Richmond field office memo suggesting, get ready for this, that Roman Catholic groups who prefer the Latin Mass are at risk of anti-Semitic, anti-immigrant, anti-LGBTQ, and white supremacist ideas. Basically, it's against everything they stand for. So what you're telling me here is Christian organizations, churches, they're the ones where the extremism lies. You want to go put informants in the Catholic Church in Richmond? Does anybody see a problem with this? Well, I will say, to his credit, FBI Director Wray came out and strongly denounced this, said that when it came to light, they took steps to purge that from the system. But he has refused, though, to produce documents in a friendly status, and now he's dealing with a subpoena. And he will have to produce records in whole. And we'll see how that goes. You may be excited to know that the policies in San Francisco have just gotten better and better. Life is so good. By the way, San Francisco is a beautiful city. It's a gorgeous place. It's a jewel right there, you know, on the bay, out there on the West Coast. Whole Foods opened its 64,000 square foot flagship store in downtown San Francisco in March of last year. 1 year ago. 1 year ago in March of 2022. And on Monday of this week, they closed it for good. Why? Because the policies in City Hall in San Francisco have made the streets so lawless, they can no longer guarantee the safety of their employees. They can no longer support the losses they're experiencing in retail theft with people who just walk in, grab stuff, and walk out with impunity. They've had to shut the restrooms off because they were finding needles and drug paraphernalia in their store restrooms. I mean, they basically said, it's gotten so bad in San Francisco right now, they're worried about the policies that they've got in place creating what they call a doom loop. A doom loop. I'd never heard this before. But a doom loop in which you have a cascade of negative financial impacts that kind of swirl like into a tornado. And it one thing closes, and then the next thing closes, and then the people won't come downtown anymore to work, so they lose occupational tax base, and the next thing you know, it's swirling to the point that the city goes into a financial crisis. Right now, City Hall officials currently expect an $800 million deficit in San Francisco's budget. But don't worry, they'll figure out how to pay those reparations, because this is a cacistocracy. Yeah. Have I got a caller on the line? I do. Is that Jeff Rowe from Indiana? Jeff, how you doing?
Doing good. Yeah, I'm sure Port-au-Prince is a real wonderful place, too, but it's an asshole because of the people that live there.
True. True that. What do you think, man? You're on the roads a lot. Do you see a lot of those racist roads?
Oh, well, yeah, they're all racist, man. They're all falling to pot. One pothole after another, especially in Tennessee. Somebody's taking some money in Tennessee, I think, because the pavement all falls apart. They'll pave a road, and 5 seconds later, it'll be falling apart again. So somebody's on the take there, I guarantee that. But you're talking about the cacistocracy.
Yeah.
We need to make this a household world, just as like gravitas was there for a while. You know, nobody knew what it means, and all of a sudden everybody was using that word. And here lately, you know, crossing the Rubicon, you know.
Yes.
You never hear that word used. Everything was crossing the Rubicon. So I would like to challenge all the right side ruffians to get out there. And from now on, it's no longer the Biden administration. It's the Biden cacistocracy.
Cacistocracy, yes. I'm
never
with you.
Never use that word again. And we need to get it, you know, amongst the people and everything. And then when somebody asks you, what does that mean? Well, you just go ahead and tell them. Maybe we can get some news places to start and use this word because, you know, it's an actually grammatical, correct, you know, grammatical, what am I trying to say here?
Grammatically correct.
I can't spit it out. Grammatically correct. Yes, thank you very much. So from now on, never refer to them as a Biden administration. From now on, it's the Biden cacistocracy.
I'm digging it. All right, Jeff, be safe on the roads, man. I got one more caller for the break I got to get to. Appreciate you, man. Oh, cacistocracy. He's right. You know what I think I might do? I think I might, my op-ed, I do an op-ed that comes out and gets picked up by a lot of newspapers around the state every week. I think this one's going to be on cacistocracy.
Yes.
I think it has
to
be. I
think that's great.
I think it's the idea. Is that Lee from Huntsville? Lee, Huntsville, how you doing?
Hey, I'm great. You definitely should write on cacistocracy because we've got one right now. It's crazy.
Yeah, we've got one.
These are the least able people, I don't know. We couldn't have chosen a better group of bumbling idiots, but, you know, here we have. I wanted to comment on the Catholic Church, quote, embedded, like said.
Yeah.
Number one, you can watch most church services, including Catholic masses, on TV, so I'm not sure why you need to embed anyone. You know, like, do we waste money on that? And number two, the people need to understand that the main goal long-term of these globalist thought leaders is to change the system with churches and remove their 501c, like the tax status, right?
Yeah.
And eventually how they're going to do that is by censoring speech. And if the pastors or priests or whatever are saying things they don't like, or groups within the church are saying things they don't like, they're going to threaten them with the removal of the tax status.
Yeah.
That is going to be the way that it goes. And they've tried it. I don't know if you remember, dig back in those memory banks. In Houston, they tried to censor pastors and demand that they give their, like, lecture notes or whatever ahead of time. Do you remember this?
No. When was that?
It was a few years ago. I think it was, like, right before COVID. It wasn't during COVID necessarily. I think it was right before it. But it was the mayor of Houston. And that actually happened where they were demanding to know what was said from the pulpit.
You know what? I have a vague recollection of that. I need to go back and dig that up.
Yeah, so that just people, pay attention. You heard it here. This is what they're going for. It's the tax status. Now, that's first. Second will be you're saying things against our government. You're saying things against, you know, whatever pandemic has to be on the way, happening, just on the way out, whatever. And then they're going to start or you're not marrying LGBTQ people. All these things are going to come up, and then they're going to say, we're going to close your church down.
Well, stand by. Watch it, because I don't disagree. And I'll tell you what, too, Lee, as I go to the break here in a second, even with that threat possibility hanging out there, churches have got to start speaking up. And we need pastors who are willing to say, Jesus is Lord, and by the way, America is great, and you do have constitutional rights. And we need churches to begin speaking to the issues, protecting kids against these transgender surgeries and all the other wackadoo stuff that's out there right now, because you can find just as much jackassery in a pulpit as you can anywhere else. And people who don't speak out, they're part of the problem.
The lukewarm, you know what happens to lukewarm people. But,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, tell these, my word to the pastors, speak louder when you start getting pressure.
I agree. Lee, got to go to break. Thanks so much. Appreciate you.
Thanks.
All right, Boomer, do the last break of the day. We'll do that and put a lid on this one. I'm going to get a little more cacistocracy in the form of light bulbs. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right, saving the world, one soundbite at a time. Tell you what, I got a caller on the line. Is that Brian? Brian from Huntsville, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, actually. But I enjoyed the person that called in and said change the Biden administration, the term to Biden cacistocracy. There is something, though, for the people that have not been listening yet over a while for the cacistocracy, is that it kind of sounds like a mental health diagnosis, a neurological or something, which still might apply. But if we're going to use the term, they might want to know what it actually means.
But, doctor, what do the tests actually show? Well, I'm sorry to say he has a cacistocracy. And it's advanced.
Some type of tumor. All right. Y'all have a blessed
day. See you, man. Take care, Brian. All right. So, Kakistocracy, wrapping up a few things here about that. You may be excited to know that the Biden administration is about to go forward with a national implementation of a policy that is likely to change your life. It's gonna drive things forward to a glossier future where unicorns dance over rainbows and things happen, and that literally geese are laying golden eggs in your front yard. It's a whole new day. What are they doing? They're going forward with a nationwide ban on light bulbs. You heard me. So do you remember the war on light bulbs a few years back during the Obama administration? And I thought we'd gotten away from that because Trump came in office and said, no, and then rescinded the ban. Which, by the way, how does the executive branch ban a whole product? How does that work? I thought that was antithetical to the way that the laws of the nation are supposed to be applied. Anyway, but what happened is Biden got the office. Yeah, there's a whole story there. Biden got the office. And is now moving forward with a sweeping nationwide ban on commonly used light bulbs as part of its energy efficiency and climate agenda. Whoop, whoop! So the regulations which prohibit retailers from selling incandescent light bulbs were finalized by the Department of Energy in April of 2022, and they go into effect this August. It's going to happen. You won't be able to buy them. They're already basically telling retailers right now, better stop stocking the shelves. I got news. Stock them all you can, because a bunch of us are going to run out there and buy up. We're going to have a whole black market of light bulbs. Hey, buddy, come down the aisle. Come down the alley right here. I got something for you. You want to buy a light bulb? I got 60-watt incandescents, a whole case of them. Where did you get that? I know a guy knows a guy. You know what I'm saying? This is where it's going to go. So they're swearing. The Department of Energy announcement says the regulations will save consumers an estimated $3 billion a year on utility bills and cut carbon emissions by 222 million metric tons over the next three decades. Shut up. Under the rules, incandescent and similar halogen light bulbs will be prohibited in favor of light-emitting diode or LED alternatives. While U.S. households have increasingly switched to LED light bulbs since 2015, fewer than half of all households reported using mostly or exclusively LEDs, including mine. Thank you very much. I do know the incandescents burn out quicker. I do know they do. But I'll tell you right now, have you ever been around one of the LEDs when it's going out? It doesn't just like get dimmer and it can go dink. No, like the one in the closet at home started flashing like a freaking strobe light at a disco. So I'm looking at this thinking, this is what they got. This is it. We're sitting here in the middle of a 40-year high inflation, and I'm coughing. I'm going to mute the button. And we're dealing with light bulbs. By the way, you'll be happy to know that in a series of articles that I'm not even going to get to, starting in March of this year, article after article, Biden's green energy crackdowns on washing machines. Biden's green energy crackdowns on washers and fridges, and oh, by the way, air conditioners. It's a kakistocracy of the highest order. Where does it end? Rise up, people! Rise up! Defeat the kakistocracy. While I choke over here in the studio. Oh, Lord, save us. All right, folks, there it is. Kakistocracy in high gear, man. Boomer and I back here tomorrow at 2. Hopefully I'll catch my voice by then. Y'all have an amazing night.